exclusively with people tonight and see if you can detect anything unusual. There was an awkward silence. You know, he finished desperately, like signs of dragons. But before you go, said the captain, do either of you know anyone who might know anything about dragons? Colon thought about it. There is always Lady Ramkin, he said. Lives in Schoon Avenue, breeds swamp dragons. You know, the little buggers people keep as pets. Oh, said Vimes gloomily. The one with the Winnie If You Love Dragons sticker on the back of her carriage. That's her, she's mental, said Sergeant Colon. What do you want me to do, sir? Said Carrot. I want you to stay and watch the office, said Vimes. Carrot's face broadened in a slow, unbelieving grin.
You mean I'm left in charge, sir? He said.
In a manner of speaking, said Vimes.
But you're not allowed to arrest anyone, understand?
He added quickly. Lady Ramkin's house was not hard to find. When Vimes rang the bell, several bits of the plaster facade fell off. That seemed to be the only effect, except that something round the back of the house started to howl. Some things. After a while, Vimes cautiously edged around the building. He reached a heavy wooden gate in a heavy wooden wall. He knocked. This caused another fusillade of strange whistling noises. The door opened. Something dreadful loomed over him.
Ah! Good man! Do you know anything about mating?
It boomed. It was quiet and warm in the watch house. The door opened. Carrot peered across the top of the ancient desk. There was no one there. Then the librarian's face rose slowly into view like an early morning coconut. He said.
Hello? Said Carrot uncertainly.
The librarian prodded the desk with a long, many-jointed finger.
What? Sorry?
The librarian rolled his eyes. It was strange, he felt, that so-called intelligent dogs, horses and dolphins never had any difficulty indicating to humans the vital news of the moment, while he, only a handful of chromosomes away from wearing a vest, found it difficult to persuade the average human to come in out of the rain. He said, and beckoned.
I can't leave the office, said Carrot. I've had orders.
The librarian's upper lip rolled back like a blind.
Is that a smile?
Said Carrot. The librarian shook his head.
Someone hasn't committed a crime, have they? A bad crime? Like a murder? Worse than murder?
The librarian bounced up and down urgently. Carrot gulped. Orders were orders, yes, but this was something else. The Supreme Grand Master raised his arms.
Brethren, he said, let us begin.
It was so easy. All he had to do was channel that great septic reservoir of jealousy and cringing resentment that the brothers had in such abundance, and then open your own mind into the place where the dragons went. Sergeant Colon and Corporal Nobbs were taking inconspicuosity seriously. They were in a rather elegant tavern in downtown Unk.
What are you thinking? Said Sergeant Colon.
Well, if we bought a bottle or two, we could go home, and then we'd be really inconspicuous.
Well, that's a good point, said Nobby.
But first, Colon announced, we gotta pay a visit.
They stumbled out into the alley behind the tavern.
Needs must,
said Sergeant Colon, and faced a handy corner. His private musings were interrupted by a grunt from the corporal.
Yes, Sergeant.
Nobby's tone was urgent and suddenly very sober.
I just saw a dragon fly over.
I've seen a horse fly,
said Sergeant Colon, hiccupping gently.
I've seen a green fly, but I ain't never seen a dragon fly.
Look, I'm not messing about,
said Nobby urgently. There was a slithering noise, and a couple of roof tiles smashed onto the street. Colon turned, and there on the roof was the dragon.
There's a dragon on the roof,
he warbled. "What shall I do, Nobby?"
"For a start, you could do your trousers up," said Nobby from behind the nearest wall.
Even shorn of her layers of protective clothing, Lady Sybil Ramkin was still toweringly big. When she spoke, every word was like a hearty slap on the back and clanged with the aristocratic self-assurance of the totally well-bred. The vowel sounds alone would have cut teak. She sat down, arranging a skirt that could have made sails for a small fleet.
"Now, then, Captain Vimes, was it?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Captain, such a dashing title, I've always thought."
She gave him a bright, brittle smile.
"There's something delightfully dangerous about a captain. What was it you had to show me?"
Vimes gripped his parcel like a chastity belt.
I wondered," he faltered, "how big swamp,
He stopped. Something dreadful was happening to his lower regions. Lady Ramkin followed his gaze.
"Oh, take no notice of him," she said cheerfully.
A small elderly dragon had crawled out from under his chair and placed its jowly muzzle in Vimes' lap.
I was wondering how big swamp dragons grow," said Vimes, trying to shift position.
"About 3 foot 6 inches," she said kindly.
"No bigger than that," said Vimes hopefully.
"Golly, no. Mostly they don't get much bigger than 2 feet. That's the cobs, of course."
Captain Vimes sat entranced, eating horrible cake, breeches gradually dissolving as a stream of dragon information flooded over him. He was helpless to prevent himself being taken out to the kennels at the back. The temperature was terrible, but not as bad as the cocktail of smells. He staggered aimlessly from one metal-lined pen to another, while pear-shaped, squeaking little horrors with red eyes were introduced.
"And this one, I'm afraid, is good boy Bindle Featherstone of Quirm," said Lady Ramkin relentlessly.
Vimes stared groggily at the small creature curled up in the middle of the floor. It bore about the same resemblance to the rest of them as Nobby did to the average human being. It was turning on Captain Vimes the most silently intelligent look he'd ever had from any animal, including Corporal Nobbs.
"It happens," said Lady Ramkin sadly. "It's all down to genes, you know. Of course, I wouldn't dream of breeding from him, but he wouldn't be able to anyway."
"Why not?" said Vimes.
"Because dragons have to mate in the air, and he'll never be able to fly with those wings, I'm afraid. You said you had something to show me,"
Lady Ramkin prompted. Vimes wordlessly handed her the parcel.
"Plaster cast of a footprint," she said baldly. "Well?"
"Does it remind you of anything?" said Vimes.
"Could be a wading bird."
"Oh." Vimes was crestfallen. Lady Ramkin laughed.
"Or a really big dragon. Got it out of a museum, did you?"
"No. I got it off the street this morning."
"Huh! Someone's been playing tricks on you, old chap."
There was circumstantial evidence," he told her. She stared at him.
"Draco nobilis," she said hoarsely.
"Pardon?" said Vimes.
"Draco nobilis, the noble dragon, as opposed to these fellows, Draco vulgaris, the lot of them. But the big ones are all gone, you know, all gone. Beautiful things they were. Weighed tons, biggest things ever to fly. No one knows how they did it."
And then they realized it was suddenly very quiet. The librarian led Carrot along the maze of aisles.
"Is there a body?"
said Carrot. The ape eventually padded to a halt, in front of a shelf no different than, it seemed, 100 others. Some of the books were chained up. There was a tap. The librarian pointed to it.
"Oh, what about it? A hole where a book should be." "A book's been taken? You summoned the watch!"
Carrot drew himself up proudly.
"Because someone's taken a book, you think that's worse than murder?"
The librarian gave him the kind of look other people would reserve for people who said things like, "What's so bad about genocide?"
"This is practically a criminal offence wasting watch time," said Carrot. "Why don't you just tell the head wizards or whoever they are?"
The librarian indicated with some surprisingly economical gestures that most wizards would not find their own bottoms with both hands.
"Well, I don't see what we can do about it," said Carrot. "What's the book called?"
The librarian sighed and held up a hand.
"Four words," said Carrot. "First word."
The ape pinched two wrinkled fingers together.
"Small word. The. Four. The.
Second word.
Third word. Small word. The. To. Fro. Of. There's something of something. Second word.
What?
Oh, first syllable. Fingers. Touching your fingers. Thumbs.
The orangutan growled and tugged theatrically at one large hairy ear.
Oh, sounds like. Fingers. Hand. Adding up. Sums. Cut off. Small word. Some. Second syllable. Small. Very small syllable. In. Un. On. On. Some. On. On. Some on. Some on. Some on. Some on. Ing. Summoning. Summoning. The summoning of something. This is fun, isn't it? Fourth word. Whole word.
He peered intently as the librarian gyrated mysteriously.
Big thing. Huge big thing. Flapping. Great big flapping leaping thing.
Sweat broke out on Carrot's forehead as he tried obediently to understand.
Sucking fingers. Sucking fingers thing. Burnt. Hot. Great big hot blowing flapping thing.
The librarian rolled his eyes. Homo sapiens, you could keep it. The great dragon turned in the air and swooped over the rooftops. Below it, yellow flames sprang up. It was done so quietly and stylishly that it took Vimes several seconds to realise that several buildings had in fact been set on fire.
"Golly," said Lady Rampkin, her eyes aglow. "Look, it's using the thermals."
"How far exactly?" Vimes said, speaking very slowly and carefully as to a child. "Did these things fly?"
"They're very territorial animals," murmured her ladyship.
"According to legend, they..." "Just give me the facts, my lady," he said impatiently.
"Not very far, really," she said, slightly taken aback.
"Thank you very much, ma'am. You've been very helpful," muttered Vimes. Somewhere in the city. There was nothing outside for miles except low fields and swamp. It had to be living somewhere in the city. By the time he reached the river, the dragon had vanished, but a pall of smoke was hanging over the streets, and several human bucket chains had been formed to pass lumps of the river to the stricken buildings. In fact, the danger was surprisingly small. Mysteriously small, when you came to think about it. Vimes had surreptitiously taken to carrying a notebook these days, and he had noted the damage. Item, a coachy house, belonging to an inoffensive businessman. Item, a smally vegetable shoppy with pinpoint accuracy. Rays of early morning sunlight were piercing the drifts of smoke as he pushed open the door of the wash house. This was home. No one else was there. He wasn't entirely surprised. He pulled his helmet over his eyes and tried to think. Where did you start looking for a bloody great dragon in a city of a million people? It was Nobby who shook him awake with the news that there was a dragon in the city, and also that Sergeant Colon had had a nasty turn. Vimes sat and blinked owlishly while the words washed around him. He was still blinking when Carrot turned up with the librarian swinging along behind him.
"I know all about it," said Carrot triumphantly. "Someone's brought it here with magic. Someone's stolen a book out of the library, and guess what it's called?"
"Can't even begin to," said Vimes weakly.
"It's called The Summoning of Dragons," confirmed the librarian.
"Oh, what's it about?" said Vimes. The librarian rolled his eyes.
"It's about how to summon dragons by magic." "And that's illegal, that is,"
said Carrot happily. Vimes groaned. That meant wizards. You got nothing but trouble with wizards. The elucidated brethren were nervous. A kind of fear crackled from brother to brother. Only Brother Doorkeeper was actually happy.
Let that be a lesson to all oppressive vegetable sellers, he kept saying. And now, said the Supreme Grand Master, there is the matter of the king.
The brothers looked solemn.
Have we found him, then? Said Brother Plasterer. That's a stroke of luck.
You never listen, do you? Snapped Brother Watchtower. It was all explained last week. We don't go round finding anyone. We make a king.
I thought he was supposed to turn up, 'cause of destiny.
Brother Watchtower sniggered. We sort of help destiny along a bit.
How do we do that, then? Said Brother Doorkeeper.
Look, the Supreme Grand Master said what we do. We find some handsome lad who's good at taking orders. He kills the dragon and Bob's your uncle. Simple.
Stroke of luck, then, finding the true king right now, said Brother Plasterer. Million to one chance, really.
We haven't found the right king, said the Supreme Grand Master wearily. For the last time, I've just found us a likely lad who looks good in a crown and can take orders and knows how to flourish a sword. Now, just listen!
Just a few more nights, thought the Supreme Grand Master. By tomorrow, the people will be so desperate, they'd crown even a one-legged troll if he got rid of the dragon. And we'll have a king. And he'll have an adviser, a trusted man, of course, and this stupid rabble can go back to the gutter. No more summoning the dragon. The streets outside the patrician's palace were thronged. It was the usual Ankh-Morpork mob in times of crisis, thought Vimes. There were a few new faces, though. There were a number of grim men with big swords slung over their shoulders, striding through the crowds.
"New spreads quick, don't it?"
observed a familiar voice by his ear.
"Morning, Captain."
Vimes looked into the grinning, cadaverous face of Cut-Me-Own-Throat Dibbler, purveyor of absolutely anything that could be sold hurriedly from an open suitcase in a busy street.
"Morning, Throat," said Vimes absently. "What are you selling?" "Genuine article, Captain."
Throat leant closer, his eyes swiveled back and forth in their sockets, like two rodents trying to find a way out.
"Can't afford to be without it," he hissed. "Anti-dragon cream."
"So, what's happening, Throat?" said Vimes. "Who are all the guys with the big swords?"
"Dragon hunters, Captain. The patrician announced a reward of $50,000 to anyone who brings him the dragon's head."
"What?"
"That's what he said. It's all written on posters."
$50,000, thought Vimes. An officer of the watch earned $30 a month.
"Cheap job," said one of the intellectuals clustered around a poster. "Well below the rate. Should be half the kingdom and his daughter's hand in marriage."
"Yeah, but he ain't a king. He's a patrician."
"And he's not married," Vimes volunteered. "He hasn't got a daughter."
"Not got a daughter?" said one of them. "Wants people to kill dragons, and he hasn't got a daughter."
"Bleeding disgusting not even having a daughter," said one of the hunters. "And what's $50,000 these days? You spend that much on nets. Let's go and have a drink."
"Right."
They nodded in righteous agreement and strode off towards the mended drum. The setting sun spread out on the horizon like a lightly poached egg. The city waited. Vimes, Colon, Nobby and Carrot were on the roof of the watch house. Colon was sulking because Vimes had forbidden him to use his bow and arrow. Half an hour went by.
"Bugger this for a game of soldiers," said Nobby eventually. "It's been scared off."
"Looks like it," Sergeant Colon conceded.
"And it's getting chilly up here," said Carrot.
He politely nudged Captain Vimes.
"Maybe we ought to be getting down, sir," he said.
Vimes said nothing. For some minutes he'd been watching the Tower of Art, which was the centre of Unseen University and the tallest building in the city. He was trying to remember its shape. Without taking his eyes off it, he grabbed Sergeant Colon's shoulder. He said, "Can you see anything odd about the top of the tower?"
Colon stared up for a while, and then laughed nervously.
Well, it looks like there's a dragon sitting on it, don't it?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Beg pardon, sir. That's just a broken turret, given the effect.
They watched it for a while, then Vimes said, Tell me, Sergeant, I ask in a spirit of pure inquiry, what do you think's causing the effect of a pair of huge wings unfurling? Colon swallowed. The dragon dropped.
It wasn't a swoop. It simply kicked away from the top of the tower and half fell, half flew straight downwards. And then it was in view again, moving like an arrow, moving like a shooting star. It glided over the rooftops at little more than head height. The watch threw themselves flat.
Sodding arseholes, said Nobby from somewhere in the guttering.
You are in uniform, Corporal Nobbs, said Captain Vimes, his voice hardly shaking at all.
Sorry, Captain. Sodding arseholes, sir.
Gosh, said Carrot.
Look at it go.
You could tell the position of the dragon by the rattle of arrows across the city and by the screams and gurgles of all those hit by the misses and ricochets. The creature turned in a right circle, pounded the air a few times to build up speed, and came back. When it passed over the watchhouse, it coughed a column of spitting white fire. Tiles under it didn't just melt, they erupted in red-hot droplets. Then, when all that was left was a spreading puddle of melted rock, the dragon raised itself with a contemptuous flick of its wings and soared away and upwards over the city. Vimes heard someone say from afar,
You were nearly a goner there, Captain.
He opened his eyes. There was a ceiling. This was very welcome. His blurred vision also revealed Corporal Nobbs, which was less so.
Where am I?
Said Vimes faintly.
I know where his place is, Captain. Belongs to some posh bint. She said to bring you up here.
Vimes' mind grabbed two clues and wrestled them together. The combination of posh and up here meant something.
We're not talking about Lady Ramkin, are we? He said cautiously.
You could be right. Great big biddy. Mad for dragons.
Nobby's rodent face broke into the most horribly knowing grin Vimes had ever seen.
You're in her bed, he said.
Vimes peered around him, feeling the first overtures of a vague panic.
Bit of a boudoir,
said Nobby, with the air of a connoisseur.
Hang on. Hang on a minute, said Vimes. There was this dragon. It was right over us. What happened?
It was young Carrot, said Nobby. He grabbed you and the sergeant and jumped off the roof just before it got us, and then this woman come running up yelling.
This is Lady Ramkin you're referring to? Said Vimes coldly.
Yeah, big fat party,
said Nobby, unmoved.
Oh, the poor dear man. You must bring him up to my house this instant, she said. So we did. Best place, too. Anyway, she said I was to fetch her when you woke up.
When Nobby had shambled out, Vimes took another look around the room. It was clearly the room of a woman, but one who had cheerfully and without any silly moping been getting on with her life while all that soppy romance stuff had been happening to other people somewhere else and been jolly grateful that she had her health. In short, it was the room of a woman who never expected that a man would ever see the inside of it. The bedside table was piled high with papers. Vimes squinted at them. Dragons was the theme. There were requests for donations and talks and things that added up to a heart big enough for the whole world, or at least that part of it that had wings and breathed fire. Beside the drift of paperwork was a book. Vimes twisted painfully and looked at the spine. It said, Diseases of the Dragon, by Sybil Deirdre Olgivana Ramkin. There was a knock at the door.
I say, are you decent?
Lady Ramkin boomed cheerfully.
I've brought you something nourishing.
Somehow Vimes imagined it would be soup. Instead it was a plate stacked high with bacon, fried potatoes and eggs. He could hear his arteries panic just by looking at it. He began.
Corporal Nobbs tells me...
And what a colourful little man Nobby is, said Lady Ramkin.
Colourful?
Vimes said weakly.
A real character. We've been getting along famously.
You have?
Oh, yes. We've found we've got a lot in common. It's an amazing coincidence, but my grandfather once had his grandfather whipped for malicious lingering.
That must make them practically family, Vimes thought. Another stab of pain from his stricken side made him wince.
You've got some very bad bruising and probably a cracked rib or two, she said. If you roll over, I'll put some more of this on.
Lady Ramkin flourished a jar of yellow ointment. Panic crossed Vimes' face. Instinctively, he raised the sheets up around his neck.
Don't play silly buggers, man, she said. One backside is pretty much like another. It's just that the ones I see generally have tails on. Now roll over!
There was no resisting that tone of voice. The cream burnt like ice. What is it?
All kinds of stuff. It'll reduce the bruising and promote the growth of healthy scale.
What?
Sorry, probably not scale. OK, all done.
She gave him a slap on the rump.
Now, sit up and have your tea. I made some notes last night, she said, about the dragon.
Oh, the dragon. Vimes relaxed a bit. I saw it drop off the tower like a swallow.
I know. It should have torn its wings off and left a bloody great hole in the ground, said Lady Ramkin firmly. You can't muck about with aerodynamics.
I knew there was something wrong, said Vimes, brightening up. And the flame, too. Nothing goes around with that kind of heat inside it. How do swamp dragons manage it?
Oh, that's just chemicals, said Lady Ramkin dismissively. They just distill something flammable from whatever they've eaten, and ignite the flame just as it comes out of the ducts.
Vimes listened. Dragons relied on permanent stomach trouble for supplies of fuel. Most of their brain power was taken up with controlling the complexities of their digestion, which could distill flame-producing fuels from the most unlikely ingredients. They could even rearrange their internal plumbing overnight to deal with difficult processes.
I shall sleep downstairs, in the kitchen, said Lady Ramkin eventually.
You've been very helpful, Vimes muttered.
I've sent Nobby down to the city to help the others set up your headquarters, said Lady Ramkin.
Vimes had completely forgotten the watch house.
Totally destroyed, said Lady Ramkin. So I'm letting you have a place in Pseudopolis Yard.
Sorry?
Oh, my father had property all over the city, she said. Quite useless to me, really. Now you really ought to get some sleep.
Vimes lay in bed, his mind racing. Pseudopolis Yard was on the Unk side of the river in quite a high-rent district. He dozed and awoke to the sound of a mob. The broken door of the Dragon House swung on its hinges. The inmates, already as highly strung as a harp on amphetamines, were going mad.
What? Said Lady Ramkin. Is the meaning of this?
The mob filled the broken doorway.
Whoa,
said the leader.
It's the dragon, isn't it?
There was a chorus of muttered agreement.
What about it?
Said Lady Ramkin.
Whoa, you've got dragons here. Could be one of them, couldn't it?
Yeah. That's right, QED.
So, what we're going to do is, we're going to put 'em down!
Lady Ramkin's bosom rose and fell like an empire. She reached out and grabbed the dunging fork from its hook on the wall.
One step nearer, I warn you, and you'll be sorry, she said.
Yeah,
said the leader hastily.
And what'll you do, eh?
Her mouth opened and shut once or twice.
I shall summon the watch, she said at last.
The threat didn't have the effect she'd expected.
Well, that's too bad, said the leader. That's really worrying, you know that? Makes me go all weak at the knees, that does.
He extracted a lengthy cleaver from his belt. A streak of green fire blasted out of the back of the shed, passed a foot over the heads of the mob, and burnt a charred rosette in the woodwork over the door. Then came a voice that was a honeyed purr of sheer deadly menace. This is Lord Mountjoy Quickfang Winterforth the Fourth, the hottest dragon in the city. It could burn your head clean off. Captain Vimes limped forward from the shadows. A small and extremely frightened golden dragon was clamped firmly under one arm. The rioters watched it, hypnotized. For a few moments, the only sound was Lord Mountjoy Quickfang Winterforth the Fourth's stomach rumbling ominously as fuel sloshed into his flame chambers.
"Now, look,
said the leader, his eyes fixed hypnotically on the dragon's head.
"There's no call for anything like that."
In fact, he might just decide to flare off all by himself, said Vimes. There was a scuffle at the back of the crowd. "But before the rest of you good citizens disperse quietly and go about your business," said Vimes meaningfully, "I suggest you look hard at these dragons. Do any of them look 60 feet long? Would you say they've got an 8-foot wingspan?"
"Dunno. Who are you, anyway?"
said the leader. Vimes drew himself up. "Captain Vimes, City Watch," he said. This met with almost complete silence, and it was at this moment that Lord Mountjoy Quickfang Winterforth the Fourth chose to belch. It was a near-invisible ball of damp flame which rolled over the mob and singed a few eyebrows.
Said the leader. "Right you are. No problem. We were just going anyway. Sorry you've been troubled."
They fled.
"That was jolly brave of you,"
said Lady Ramkin admiringly. "Let's hope it doesn't catch on," said Vimes. Once again he was aware of eyes staring fixedly at him. He glanced sideways into the long pointed face of good boy Bindle Featherstone, rearing up in a pose best described as the last puppy in the shop. To his astonishment, he found himself reaching over and scratching it behind its ears. It responded with a strange noise that sounded like a complicated blockage in a brewery.
"It's all right," said Lady Ramkin. "It's his stomach rumbling. That means he likes you."
Vimes found that he was rather pleased about this. As far as he could recall, nothing in his life before had thought him worth a burp. "How would it be if I..."
"You don't think you might like..."
They stopped.
"Please accept good boy as a friend," said Lady Ramkin.
Vimes stared and stared at the malformed little thing, and the idea that had been knocking for attention for the last few minutes finally gained entrance. He said, "Could one dragon sniff out another? I mean, follow a scent."
"Sun's going down," said Sergeant Colon.
"Yes, Sergeant."
Colon ran a finger round his collar. Any minute now, he knew, he was going to have to say that it was time they went out on patrol. He didn't want to go out on patrol. He wanted to find a nice sub-basement somewhere. And thus he was terribly relieved when a small coach pulled up outside the yard. Out of it stepped Captain Vimes. Following him was the woman known to the sergeant as Mad Sybil Ramkin. And finally, hopping down obediently on the end of its lead, was a small... The sergeant was too nervous to take account of actual size.
"Well, I'll be mogadored. They've only gone and caught it."
"Don't be daft, it's just a swamp dragon," said Nobby.
"She's all right, is Lady Sybil. A real lady."
The other two guards turned and stared at him. This was Nobby talking. Lady Ramkin and Vimes entered the room. Vimes gave his men his usual look of resigned dismay.
"My squad," he mumbled.
"Fine body of men," said Lady Ramkin. "The good old rank and file, eh?"
"The rank, anyway," said Vimes. Lady Ramkin beamed encouragingly.
"I always think we can all sleep safer in our beds, knowing that these brave men are watching over us,"
said Lady Ramkin, walking sedately along the rank, like a treasure galleon running ahead of a mild breeze.
"And who is this?"
It's difficult for an orangutan to stand to attention. Its body can muster the general idea, but its skin can't. The librarian was doing his best, however.
"Plain clothes, ma'am," said Nobby smartly. "Special ape services."
Very enterprising indeed, said Lady Ramkin. How long have you been an ape, my man? Well done.
She turned to Vimes, who was definitely looking incredulous.
A credit to you, she said. A fine body of men. Anthropoids, corrected Lady Ramkin.
A trickling noise and a strong chemical smell prompted them to look around. Lady Ramkin sighed.
Fine specimen you got there, Mom,
Nobby went on, revelling in the newfound experience of social intercourse.
It's not mine, she said. It belongs to the captain now. His name is Good Boy Bindle Featherstone.
He looks more like my brother Errol,
said Nobby, playing the cheeky, chirpy, lovable city sparrow card for all it was worth. Vimes looked at the creature, which was investigating its new environment, and knew that it was now, irrevocably, an Errol. Anyway, men, said Vimes.
I wasn't talking to you, sir.
What's this doing here?
Said Sergeant Colon hurriedly. With you being away and all, I swore him in, sir.
The ape, sir. Swore him in what, Sergeant? Said Vimes.
As special constable, sir, said Colon, blushing. I think it's a frightfully good idea, said Lady Ramkin. Well done, that ape.
Vimes shrugged.
Okay, he said. Okay, I give in. Fine, give him a badge. Yes, why not? Fine, fine, fine.
Welcome to the new watch, snapped Vimes. The brethren were nervous. He'd heard them talking.
Brothers, said the Supreme Grand Master, are the cuffs of veracity duly enhanced?
What? Said Brother Watchtower vaguely. Oh, the cuffs. Yeah, enhanced. Right. The Supreme Grand Master paused.
Brothers, he said softly, we are so near. Just once more, just a few hours, once more, and the world is ours. Do you understand, brothers?
Brother Plasterer shuffled a foot. He went on,
all the greatest wizards feel a little ill at ease before undertaking a great work such as this.
The brethren preened themselves.
Great wizards, that's us.
Yeah.
But the dragon...
Brother Watchtower began.
There won't be any dragon. We won't need it. Look, said the Supreme Grand Master. It's quite simple. The lad will have a marvellous sword, and when it touches the dragon, it'll be... Plum. I mean, the dragon will vanish. End of dragon.
The brethren stared at him.
That's what the people will believe, anyway, he added. We can provide a bit of mystic smoke at the time. Now, let us commence.
He concentrated. It was easier every time. Can we get on? Said Vimes.
We're going to see if Errol can sniff out the dragon's lair. We'll start by that wall in the shades.
I say, all this is tremendously exciting,
said Lady Ramkin.
Oh, I don't think you should come, my lady, Vimes began.
Sybil, please.
It's... a very disreputable area, you see.
But I'm sure I shall be perfectly safe with your men, she said. I'm sure vagabonds just melt away when they see you.
The wall hadn't been knocked down yet, and still bore its grisly fresco. Errol sniffed around it, trotted up the alley once or twice, and went to sleep.
Didn't work, said Sergeant Colon.
Good idea, though, said Nobby loyally.
Vimes scooped up the dragon. It had been a vain hope, anyway.
We'd better get back, he said.
They walked in silence. He pulled out the key to the new headquarters. While he was fumbling in the lock, Errol woke up and started to hammer.
Not now, Vimes said wearily.
A slate slid down the roof and smashed on the cobbles beside him.
Captain,
hissed Sergeant Colon.
What? It's on the roof, Captain.
Vimes looked up. The dragon, was peering down interestedly over the guttering. It was even more angry than usual at the moment. Its eyes were, for the moment, focused on Errol, who was going frantic.
Don't make any sudden moves, said Lady Ramkin's voice, and don't show fear.
Vimes became aware of a gentle hissing sound. The dragon was taking a deep breath. At that moment, a horn rang out. The dragon raised its head in a puzzled way. The horn rang out again. It sounded like a challenge. The dragon gave Vimes a smouldering look, unfolded its enormous wings, leant heavily into the air, and flew slowly away in the direction of the sound.
"Forward!"
shouted Lady Ramkin. People were hurrying towards the plaza. The dragon drifted ahead of them.
"Some loony's going to fight it," said Nobby.
"Poor bugger'll be baked in his own armour," said Colon.
This seemed to be the opinion of the crowds lining the plaza. The people of Ankh-Morpork had a straightforward, no-nonsense approach to entertainment, and while they were looking forward to seeing a dragon slain, they'd be happy to settle instead for seeing someone being baked alive in his own armour.
"Peanuts! Figgins! Hot sausages!"
whined a voice behind them.
"Hello, lads. Hello, Captain Vimes. In at the death, eh? Have a sausage."
"What's going on, throat?" said Vimes.
"Some kid's ridden into the city and said he'd kill the dragon," said Cut Me Own Throat. "Got a magic sword, he says. Says he's the rightful heir, too."
Vimes shook his head. "You've lost me there," he said.
"Heir," said Throat patiently. "You know, heir to the throne."
"What throne?"
"The throne of Ankh."
"What throne of Ankh?"
"You know, kings and that."
Vimes fought his way into the lee of Lady Ramkin. The dragon was circling the plaza slowly and warily. Vimes craned to see over the heads in front of him. The plaza went quiet. The dragon was almost stationary in the air, apart from the slow beating of its wings. The boy dismounted, flourished the sword, and turned to face the distant enemy. "He certainly looks confident," Vimes told himself. "And it was certainly a very shiny sword, you had to admit that." And now it was 2 o'clock the following morning, and all was well, apart from the rain. Fireworks banged and sparkled in the damp air. Vimes stalked gloomily through the crowded streets. The sight of Ankh-Morporkians celebrating by waving flags was mysteriously upsetting. That was something only silly subject people did in other countries. His errant feet led him back to the yard. After all, where else was there? He sat back and put his feet up. What a day, and what a fight. The young man standing there looking tiny and unprotected, the dragon taking a deep breath in a way now very familiar to Vimes, and not flaming. That had surprised Vimes. It had surprised the crowd. It had certainly surprised the dragon. It had remained surprised right up to the moment when the lad ducked in under one claw and thrust the sword home. And then a thunderclap. You'd have thought there'd have been some bits of dragon left, really, a puzzler, that. The purple smoke was quite impressive, though. The mob had borne the young man in triumph to the patrician's palace. Lord Vetinari had been locked up in his own dungeons. What a happy coincidence for the city, thought Vimes, that just when it needed a champion to kill the dragon, a king came forth. It was a lot better than birthmarks and swords, that was for sure. This is where the dragons went. They lie not dead, not asleep. Possibly the word we're looking for here is angry. It could remember the feel of real air under its wings and the sheer pleasure of the flame. There'd been empty skies above and an interesting world below. It had been summoned and then disdainfully banished again. Suddenly it recalled a mind, the peevish voice so full of its own diminutive importance, a mind almost like that of a dragon, but on a tiny, tiny scale. Ah, it stretched its wings. Lady Ramkin slipped off the hated pink dancing shoes. As the last representative of one of Ankh-Morpork's oldest families, she'd had to go to the Victory Ball to show willing. Funny, really. She'd always thought it took weeks, months, to organise a ball, invitations, decorations, sausages on poles. But it had all been done in a matter of hours, as if someone had been expecting it, and a coronation tomorrow. She was still musing on that as she mixed the dragon's late-night feed. She didn't bother to change out of the pink tulle ball gown, but slipped the heavy apron over the top, donned the gloves and helmet, and pulled the visor down over her face and ran through the driving rain to the shed. She knew it as soon as she opened the door. The dragons, each in its pen, were sitting up in attentive silence and staring up through the roof. A couple of minutes later, she was on her way down into the damp city. Someone else in the city was ill at ease. He was the librarian. Sergeant Colon had given him a badge. The librarian turned it round and round in his big gentle hands, nibbling at it. Orangs liked things neat, and things weren't neat. Or rather, they were too neat. Sudden heirs to ancient thrones didn't grow on trees, and he should know. The book was the key to it, he was sure of that. Well, there was one way to find out what was in the book. It was a perilous way, but the librarian ambled along perilous ways all day. Vime's footsteps echoed wetly from the surrounding buildings as he picked his way across the plaza. The boy had stood here. And, said Vimes, this is where the dragon was killed. He fumbled in his pockets. His finger closed on a stub end of chalk. He walked backwards, dragging the chalk over the stones. Errol started eating a broken bottle with every sign of enjoyment. You know what I think, said Vimes. I think it went somewhere. Thunder rolled. Errol stopped in mid-crunch. Very slowly, the little dragon's head turned to face upwards. Vimes shivered under his cape. Look, don't muck about, he said. There's nothing there. Errol started to tremble. Go on, finish your bottle. Nice bottle. A thin, worried, keening noise broke from the dragon's mouth. I'll show you, said Vimes. He cast around and spotted one of Throat's sausages. Look, he said, and threw it upwards. He felt sure, watching its trajectory, that it ought to have fallen back to the ground. It shouldn't have fallen away, as if he'd dropped it neatly into a tunnel in the sky. Vivid purple lightning lashed from the empty air and struck the houses on the near side of the plaza. It formed an actinic column, appeared to stabilize, and started to spin slowly. As the light revolved, it sent out thin zigzag streamers that jittered away across the rooftops, sometimes dipping, sometimes doubling back. Searching. Errol ran up Vimes' back in a flurry of claws and fastened himself firmly on his shoulder. Lady Ramkin's coach rattled into the plaza and pounded straight for Vimes. A furious vision in padded leather, gauntlets, tiara, and 30 yards of damp pink tulle leant down towards him and screamed, "Come on, you bloody idiot!" He was hauled in bodily, and the coach bounced away over the flagstones. A tongue of fire hit the dark tower of art and disappeared through the dome of Unseen University's library. Lady Ramkin brought the coach to a halt. "What does it want the library for?" she said, frowning. "Maybe it wants to look something up?"
"Don't be silly," she said breezily. "What would a flash of lightning want to read?"
"Something very short." The line of light exploded into an arch between the library's dome and the centre of the plaza and hung in the air. Then, in a sudden rush, it became a sphere of fire, which grew swiftly to encompass almost all the plaza, vanished suddenly, and left the night full of ringing violet shadows. And the plaza full of dragon. The dragon could feel the magic flowing into it, renewing it from second to second in defiance of all boring physical laws. This was the right stuff. There was no end to what it could do with power like this. But first it had to pay its respects to certain people. The librarian swung on his knuckles between the endless bookshelves. Books bend space and time. One reason the owners of those aforesaid little rambling, pokey second-hand bookshops always seem slightly unearthly is that many of them really are. You stray into L-space at your peril. All libraries everywhere are connected in L-space. All libraries. Everywhere. and the librarian navigating by book sign carved on shelves by past explorers, navigating by smell, was heading purposely for one very special one. There was one consolation. If he got it wrong, he'd never know it. The dragon's head reared against the grey of dawn, turning slowly. Lady Ramkin and Vimes peered cautiously from behind a water trough.
"I knew it wasn't killed," growled Vimes. "It was sent somewhere by some sort of magic, I bet. It needs magic to keep it alive."
"There used to be a lot of natural magic around once," said Lady Ramkin thoughtfully.
"There you are, then. All those thefts," thought Vimes. "Someone had been feeding the dragon."
He looked at the bulk of the unseen university library of magic books, the greatest accumulation of distilled magical power on the Discworld. And now the dragon had learnt how to feed itself. He saw to his horror that Lady Ramkin was striding towards the dragon.
"If it's descended from the swamp dragons, then I can probably control it," she called back.
To his shame, Vimes realized that his legs were going to have nothing to do with any mad dash to drag her back. He risked a peep over the horse trough. The dragon looked puzzled. He wasn't surprised.
"Sit!"
bellowed Lady Ramkin, in a tone so undisobeyable that even Vimes felt his legs involuntarily sag.
"Good boy!"
The dragon raised one talon in a leisurely fashion and pinned her to the ground. As Vimes half rose in horror, Errol escaped from his grip. He bounced across the plaza in a series of wing-whirring arcs, mouth gaping, emitting wheezing burps, trying to flame. He was answered with a tongue of blue-white fire. The dragon reared up and tried to bat the tormentor out of the air. Vimes scurried across the intervening space, grabbed Lady Ramkin by an arm and a handful of bedraggled ball gown, and swung her onto his shoulder. He got several yards before the essential bad judgment of this move dawned on him. He went, "Ugh!" His vertebrae and knees were trying to fuse into one lump. Purple spots flashed on and off in front of his eyes. A gout of livid dragon fire crackled into the flagstones a few feet away. Next, the horse trough was behind him, and Lady Ramkin was in his arms, or at least was pinning his arms to the ground. Then the dragon sprang ponderously into the air, and with one slow flap of its wings began to scull leisurely away up and into the mists.
"We've got to follow it," said Lady Ramkin.
The clouds were clustered thickly over Ankh-Morpork.
"Lot of ladders about," said Nobby.
He mooched over to the nearest one and kicked it.
"What's going on?" he said.
A figure looked him up and down.
"Who wants to know, Tiddler?" he said.
"Excuse me, we do,"
said Carrot, looming out of the fog like an iceberg. The man gave a sickly grin.
"Well, it's the coronation, isn't it?"
he said.
"Got to get the old banting out, haven't we?"
Nobby gave the dripping finery a jaundiced look.
"It looks new," said Nobby. "What are them fat, saggy things on that shield?"
"Those are the royal hippos of Ankh," said the man proudly. "Remind us of our noble heritage."
They felt the sudden downdraft. A blast of colder air swept along the street and was gone. Colon froze.
"Here, you don't think..." "We saw it killed, didn't we?"
said Nobby urgently.
"We saw it vanish," said Carrot. "Maybe it's another dragon. We should warn people and..."
"No," said Sergeant Colon vehemently.
"We've got a king now. It's his job, dragons."
"That's right," said Nobby.
"Makes you glad you're common," said Colon.
Errol came trotting up the middle of the street, stumpy tail high, his eyes fixed on the clouds above him.
"What's that with him?" said Nobby.
A clatter behind them introduced the Ramkin coach.
"Did you see a dragon go past,
apart from Errol?" said Vimes.
"Well, said the sergeant. "Sort of, sir. Possibly."
"Then don't stand there like a lot of boobies," said Lady Ramkin. "Get in, plenty of room inside."
There was. Errol's progress was slowing a bit. He kept looking up and whining.
"Can't see a damn thing," Vimes said. "I wonder if..."
The fog, as if in acknowledgement, lit up. Ahead of them it blossomed like a chrysanthemum and made a noise like whoomph. "Oh, no," moaned Vimes. "Not again."
"Ah, the cups of integrity, well and truly suffused," intoned Brother Watchtower. "Aye, suffused full well. Have the demons of infinity been bound with many chains?"
"Oh, damn," said Brother Plasterer. "There's always something."
"And you should call me Acting Supreme Grand Master, understand?" said Brother Watchtower.
"No one said anything to us about you being Acting Supreme Grand Master," muttered Brother Doorkeeper.
"Well, that's all you know, because I bloody well am, because Supreme Grand Master asked me to open the lodge on account of him being delayed with all this coronation work," said Brother Watchtower haughtily. "Look, let's not spoil it all now, eh? Lads, arranging that fight with the dragon and everything, that was something, wasn't it?"
The circle of robed and cowled figures shuffled in grudging agreement.
"Okay, fair enough. Yeah."
It began to creep over Brother Watchtower that something wasn't right, but he couldn't quite put a name to it.
He said. "Brothers?"
They too shifted uneasily.
"Brothers,"
repeated Brother Watchtower, trying to reassert himself.
"We are all here, aren't we?"
"Of course we are."
But Brother Watchtower's troublesome thoughts were interrupted by a scrabbling sound on the roof. A few nubs of plaster dropped into the circle.
"Brother Doorkeeper, if you could just unbolt the dread portal,"
he quavered. And then there was light. There was no pain. There was no time. The immortal remains of Brother Watchtower watched the dragon flap away into the fog, and then looked down at the congealing puddle of stone, metal, and miscellaneous trace elements that was all that remained of the secret headquarters, and of its occupants. Apart from the Supreme Grand Master, the only elucidated brother to be away at the time of the dragon was Brother Fingers. He'd been sent out for some pizzas. When the guards rolled up just behind Errol, Brother Fingers was standing with a stack of cardboard boxes in his hands and his mouth open. Where the dread portal should have been was a warm, melted patch of assorted substances.
"Oh, my goodness," said Lady Ramkin.
"Excuse me, sir," Vimes said.
"Did you by any chance see what—"
When Brother Fingers turned towards him, his face was the face of a man who had hang-glided over the entrance to hell. said Brother Fingers. Colon peered under the hood.
"I know him, sir," he said. "Benji Lightfoot Bogis, sir. He's a capo de Monte in the Thieves Guild. Used to work at the university."
"Oh, did he?"
"Put him in the coach, you two," said Vimes. "If it's all right with you, Lady Ramkin."
"Sybil,"
corrected Lady Ramkin. Vimes blushed and plunged on. "Charge him with the theft of one book, to wit, The Summoning of Dragons."
"Right you are, sir," said Sergeant Colon. "Carrot, you come with me," said Vimes.
Brother Fingers volunteered.
"And take Errol," added Vimes. "What are we going to do now, sir?" said Carrot, as the carriage rattled off.
Vimes looked around him. There were footsteps in the fog. Vimes stiffened and pulled Carrot into the shelter of a doorway. A figure loomed out of the billows. "Another one of them," thought Vimes. He stepped out.
"Excuse me, sir," he began.
The cowl swung around. There was a hiss of indrawn breath.
"I just wonder if you'd mind—" "After him, Lance Constable!"
The figure had a good start. Presently Vimes realised he was running alone. He panted to a halt, and looked back just in time to see Carrot jog gently around the corner.
"What's wrong?"
he wheezed.
"Sergeant Colon said I wasn't to run," said Carrot.
Slow comprehension dawned.
"Oh," Vimes said.
"Aye." "See?" He patted Carrot on the shoulder. "Come on. We better get along to the palace." The first problem was the palace guard. Vimes had never liked them. They'd never liked him.
"Captain Vimes," said Vimes, staring straight ahead. "To see the king.
it of the utmost importance.
"Yeah, well, it'd have to be," said a guard. "Captain Slimes, was it?"
"Vimes," said Vimes evenly.